Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Lecego Management Conference hosted by African Alliance Capital Markets. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Harry Wildermuth-Brown. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us today. We're delighted to have the senior management of Lecego on the line. We have Chris Lowe, chief executive, Colin Patterson, CFO, and Boitsenyo Kogodinsky, who is the head of investor relations. What I'm going to ask Chris to do is to give us a 10-minute appreciation of the full year numbers, highlighting the areas of particular interest, changes in trend, and so on. And then we will, without any further ado, we'll go straight to Q&A. Chris, would that be all right?
Well, I'm going to give a little more strategic insight to what we're doing, as well as our numbers.
Well, that's perfect. Perfect. So, over to you, Chris. And when you've covered the ground you want to, we can then move to Q&A. Thanks so much.
Okay, so good afternoon, good morning, depending where you are, and welcome to this first investor presentation course. We did issue a pack, albeit very late, so I am referring to some slides when I talk, but I will try and visualize them for you as we go through. I thought just a little bit of strategic update before the numbers would make sense, and Colin can talk to the numbers, so it's not just me for the talk. Basically, in a nutshell, we're pleased that we've had good underlying growth with profitability and continuing good shareholder returns. Basically, the underlying growth rate in constant exchange rates was about an 8% profit before tax increase. We have changed and tightened up our methodology on provisioning, which has brought that underlying growth down, and we've taken quite a hefty hit on foreign exchange, around 76 million pula hit. So year on year, we look pretty flat on a reported basis, but there is underlying growth of nearly double digit, and we've exceeded the magic Pula 1 billion figure in this market. If I can just touch on the foreign exchange impact, clearly operating in emerging markets, and in our case across now 10 African countries, foreign exchange currency fluctuation is part of business as usual. It has been, as we all know, rather more volatile in many countries across our footprint this year. But we have got a number of actions that we've already taken in place to ensure that we do manage this to the extent possible. We've got now a medium-term note in Metcash in Mozambique. We have increased our funding in local currency wherever possible. And we introduced during 2015 a central ALM, asset liability management function, to help us see opportunities for hedging and getting best prices from banks, etc. It's ongoing, but it has hit our results in 2015. From a loans and advances perspective, our book has grown by around 14%. Some of that growth is obviously through the acquisitions of Nigeria and Advance Tanzania. But Botswana and Kenya remain our largest absolute growth numbers. Botswana grew around 140 million pula net. And Kenya, through its microfinance business, has grown over 200 million pula during the year. The next slide broke it down, as you've seen before, the loan book by country. What's pleasing to see is improved market shares in Mozambique and Namibia. In Botswana, we suffered from the banks entering our space quite heavily in the last 6 months of the year. So we've lost a little bit of share, but we've still overall increased our bottom line in Botswana by 7%, which we're very pleased about, where most of the banks are seeing shrinking profitability. The same slide also gives you a breakout of our traditional payroll business, which remains at 89% of our total book. It shows you the overall loan growth at the 14% I mentioned, but in underlying terms by country, which comes out at 18%. The next slide on microfinance shows that we continue to grow at a fast pace. Kenya grew at 110% from a loan book growth perspective year on year, and Rwanda at 62%. Uganda this year did not do as well. They went through some tough periods around the deduction code with a dispute between the Ministry of Finance and Public Service. That is now behind us, as is the election, so we are more positive about the outlook going forward. Overall, that gives, again, continued diversification of revenues and profits. So we've shown on this slide 2010 versus 2015. Botswana contributed 71% of revenues in 2010. It's now only contributing 36%, with Namibia contributing 22% and Mozambique at 14%. From a profitability perspective, again, Botswana's dropped from 86% down to 38%, with Namibia at 27% and Mozambique at 15%. So our diversification strategy continues to give us a much better balanced portfolio. And as we grow the Tanzanian business and the Nigerian business over the next few years, I think we'll end up with quite a nice balance portfolio across East, West, and Southern Africa. Briefly touching on the two acquisitions in the period, we closed both after quite a long regulatory approval period. Advance Bank Tanzania, where we were issued new equity to give us a 75% shareholding, closed at the end of November, and we're already starting to see the benefits of that acquisition. Part of the acquisition approval involved registering Sodika, our existing business with 45,000 customers, as a third-party agent of the bank, which enables us to use our footprint of over 100 points of access in Tanzania to originate business for the bank, as well as to be documentary receiving sites and marketing platforms. We have converted so far two out of the proposed five Fidica branches into banking branches. There's obviously different compliance regulations around security and the like. And pleasingly, Arusha, which was the first in Tanzania last week, Arusha is already seeing new deposit customers coming in and some conversion of existing borrowing-only clients into full-service banking clients. The bank has added benefit that it has ATMs, it has a mobile banking offering, and with Fidica as an agent for it, it's in effect jumped straight to a full access service provider in Tanzania. We have recently appointed a new Tanzanian CEO as well. Nigeria closed effectively 31st of December, so we've got the balance sheet consolidated, but obviously not the P&L. This is an exciting entrance for us to a new market in, as we know, the largest economy in Africa. And by buying FBN, First Bank's business, we believe it is a prudent way in that, one, the nature of FBN means that there was reasonable attention to governance and management. Secondly, they have a footprint that covers most of Lagos State and a branch in Abuja. There are 28 branches in all and around 320 staff. It is profitable and it has a national license, which will enable us to move into whichever state we wish to do business in. Clearly, though, our initial focus, which has been ongoing since we signed the share purchase agreement, is to re-engineer the business and to put considerable focus into growing the balance sheet. The business has trodden water for a little over a year, and we have seen a need to strengthen management. We have basically installed our microfinance partners. They have got the chief risk officer and the chief operating officer role today, and indeed the CRO is deputizing the temporary CEO until we complete hiring of a new CEO. Moving to the second of our strategic imperatives, financial inclusion. There's the classic triangle that we show investors on a regular basis. With the acquisition of Nigeria, we now have over 100,000 deposit customers. There's still a relatively small balance from them, but we have 4 out of our 10 countries with deposit licenses now, and the Namibian license still moving ahead from a provisional through to a full license, hopefully in the first half of this year. We're also very pleased, and there will be a press release early next week, to have been invited by the Alliance for Financial Inclusion to join their global network of financial policymakers. There's around 90 countries that are part of AFI, as it's known, and primarily regulators and government departments form their membership. We will be the 5th private member accepted into the alliance, with the likes of GSMA, Visa, BBVA being other private members. So we are getting a place at the top table, which will enable us to, on one side, share certain aspects of our IP in the way we are digitizing financial services to those that are financially included, and on the other side, be able to seek advocacy changes to financial regulations that are a blockage to our strategy for financial inclusion. There's another slide there I'll jump over, but basically, from a funder's perspective, is quite important, because the research we did in 2014 through to 2000 and early 2015 shows in most countries more than 50% of what we lend is used in an impactful way, so in effect for education, health, building or improving a home, and for business. That's something that we're working more on, because we recognize that we want to distance ourselves from the irresponsible lenders and from the pure consumer finance players. We want to be very much an impact financial service provider, and we have engaged a company called EBS in the last 6 months to help us build impact scorecards so we can measure progress on that front. Very quickly, just wrapping up on the strategy, 2 further areas, which is offering simple, appropriate, and affordable solutions. We are in the process of launching our Let's Go account, which will offer a solutions packaged under Let's Pay, Let's Borrow, Let's Save, and Let's Live. Those of you that have seen the slide pack will see a new logo and wordmark. Today we have refreshed our branch and launched it, rebrand and launched it. And this Let's Go account will be central to the way we offer services, whether that's over a mobile app, via USSD, call center, third-party agents, cards, etc. So the last point is access anytime, anywhere. We see that as very much a key part to the customer experience that we're building. To move from just a quick turnaround, which were well known, 24 to 48 hours approval of loans, we need to be ensuring that more of the needs of our customers are met, and in due course we need to anticipate their needs. Finishing just on risk and leverage, we have contained our cost of risk to 2.3%, just under 3. We have taken a harder stance on the methodology for provisioning this year. That is not reflecting a material deterioration in the quality of our book, but moving away from the traditional recency concept, whereby as long as you have paid us an instalment within the last 90 days, you are performing, to one where we provide if you're 30 days in arrear, 60 days in arrear, and 90 days in arrear. We're still using both because of some markets where there are systemic issues around when salary deductions are paid over to us, but that has increased our overall provisioning. But we feel at this stage that given our impairment provision is sitting at around 250 million pula of a book that's 6.3 billion, that really is not material from a micro and consumer finance perspective. Lastly, on our funding and our debt equity profile, we increased our borrowings year on year by some 43%. With a continuing good mix of commercial banks, development funding. We introduced commercial paper and our medium-term notes. In December, we had a refinancing of our RAND medium-term notes, and we, in effect, were able to issue new notes as part of that, so we raised additional debt funding through the medium-term note program. That leaves our debt equity at 66%, and our target remains 1-to-1 or 100%. And we were also able to slightly reduce our cost of funding from 11.3% to 10.5%. Obviously, in a rising interest rate global and local environment, holding that cost of debt to 10.5, I think, is going to be a challenge. But we are, through the central ALM function I mentioned earlier on, very focused on holding interest rate rises in line with market developments. So overall, a good set of results. I'm going to just hand the column just to wrap up on some key headlines with the pure financials. Difficult conditions in 2015. We are pleased with the good results that Colm's just about to run through. Over to you, Colm.
Chris, thank you, and good afternoon to everybody, or morning to everybody. I'll just touch on a few points. Overall, we had a good growth in loans and advances to customers, with a 14% increase in pula terms and 18% in local currency. We continue to enter new countries and diversify on a phased basis from the core business of payroll lending. Revenue overall increased, the revenue total for the year was more than 2 billion pula for the first time. So that was a significant milestone for us. And in a very competitive environment, for the second year in a row, we've been able to keep our margins reasonably steady, which again, we're quite satisfied given that it is a competitive margin. Market. From an efficiency perspective, we kept the cost-income ratio consistent with last year at 29%, and that's despite the investment that has been made in the business in terms of people, in terms of infrastructure, etc. So our overall level of income grew more than our cost, which is a key internal target for us. So asset quality remains within our target levels. So while we are looking for growth, we're only looking for good quality growth. So that remains. And from a capital position, the balance sheet remains strong. We've taken steps to address the perhaps over level of capitalization with the increase in debt during the year. But we remained in a good, strong balance sheet, strong cash reserves of over $50 million at the end of the year, a strong pipeline for new funding lines, and we maintained the dividend payout ratio at 50% of profit before tax, which gives a dividend yield of approximately 6% for the year. So with that, I think we would hand back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. To ask a question, please press star then one. We will pause to see if there are any questions.
Yeah, operator, it's Harry here. Perhaps I could just start things rolling. Colin, can you talk about the increase in the cost of overdrafts and term loans, I think was the definition in the P&L, which seemed to be up sharply year on year?
Harry, thanks. So we did increase the number of facilities and the quantum of facilities that we have with commercial banks during the year. It was slightly mixed bag in that Botswana was slightly different to the rest of the countries whereby interest rates reduced during 2015, although there was a bit of a hiccup in between with the banks and the central bank. But so rather from a Botswana perspective, we've maintained our funding lines, but we've introduced a few from reverse inquiries onto our local note program. So that assisted with the overall blended cost of funding reducing slightly during the year. But from our perspective, it's looking at all of our different funding sources and looking to grow and diversify them all, while trying to keep the overall interest blended cost as close as possible to current levels in the short term.
Mr. Waldemar Brown, we do have a question from the telephone audience.
Let's go for it.
Thank you. Our question comes from Sharath Dua of Charlemagne Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Thank you for your time today. I haven't got the presentation in front of me yet, so apologies for that. But I just wanted to get a bit more detail on the asset quality. You talked about the change in provisioning methodology. You also said, Chris, that it's not a material deterioration. But if you can give a bit more color as to what you're actually seeing in the key markets from an asset quality perspective, that would be appreciated.
Sure. Thanks a million. What we've decided to do and what we've taken the first steps on is to adjust our existing provisioning and impairment methodology to make it a little bit more conservative. So we've started that process. The underlying asset quality in all of our books is in line with what our expectations are that we've communicated previously, which would be for pure payroll lending between 1-3% per annum, and for the microfinance between 3-6%. So all of our businesses are in line with that, with the exception of Rwanda, which is slightly higher than that guidance, which is something that we are looking at and working on. So really for us, it's the underlying credit quality is in line with what our expectations are. And we're just being slightly more conservative and prudent on the estimates and judgments that make up the overall provisioning process.
Okay, well, thanks. And just sort of following on from that, in terms of your appetite for risk, can you comment on whether you are turning down more applications than previously? Are you receiving fewer applications? I mean, how is the current environment in the established market affecting that side of the growth in the balance sheet?
There hasn't been any significant change. I think, if anything, in Botswana, our main market, the commercial banks have been in our space for a long time, but are getting even more aggressive, if you can put it that way. But in terms, so that's business as usual from our perspective. So the level of applications, the numbers, the acceptance or decline rate, there hasn't been any significant difference from prior years.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Our next question is from Chris Stewart of Investec. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the time. Just a quick one from my side. I believe, Chris, you mentioned in your opening speech that you had a, I think you said 77 million put an impact to the P&L as a result of currency. I presume that's as a result of currency translation back into Pula of the attributable profits from some of the other operating jurisdictions. Maybe you can just clarify that. And I guess the second point is the question around the foreign currency translation losses booked through equity of 283 million Pula. Maybe you could just unpack that a little bit for us. I presume that's the mark-to-market of NAV back into Pula of the various underlying subsidiaries. Maybe just where the bulk of that arose from, whether there are any options to try and mitigate those impacts going forward. Thanks.
Okay, and principally the answer is yes and yes, but Colin's going to give you a little more detail around the P&L impact and the retained earnings impact.
Chris, thank you. So really where from the P&L and from the balance sheet perspective, the two currencies that moved depreciated against the Pula reasonably significantly during 2015 was the South African rand, which is also linked to the Namibian dollar, Swaziland currency, the Sutu currency, and the Mozambique Medibash. So those depreciating currencies were the main drivers both on the P&L and both on the foreign currency translation account. What we're looking to do is, with the introduction of new local currency funding lines that we've got in our pipeline for either quarter one or quarter two this year, we should be able to close off the open loan positions that have a direct P&L impact. The balance sheet is a longer exercise because that will involve moving capital out of the subsidiaries and into the hold co, which is on our agenda and which we've started to in terms of the dividend flow from some of the subsidiaries. But there's tax considerations around that we would like to try and manage as well. So on the P&L, we've got some short-term gains that we can do. On the balance sheet, very much on our radar, but that will take a little bit longer to address the more structure of the group in terms of where the capital is across the business.
Just to follow up on that, perhaps, just help me understand, if you're going to start taking deposits and offering slightly broader transactional banking services in country, is there the opportunity to actually remove capital from country and, if you like, return it to head office? That's a horrible term, but return it back to Botswana to manage the Pula risk, or are you going to need to sit with a minimum regulatory capital balance in country which may prevent you from doing that sort of activity?
We would already have, certainly in Namibia and Mozambique, which is our two largest countries, excess capital, if you like, in terms of what the regulatory requirements are. So, yes, your comment is absolutely valid, but we do have headroom to be able to do so.
Okay, so you'll be able to pull some of it back, leave some of it there, and as and when required, potentially inject additional capital, or even better, try to raise some other form of capital in country to manage the currency risk that way.
Absolutely.
All right, good. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Deborah Muriuki of African Alliance. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the call. My question is on the Namibian provisional license. You didn't mention that the conversion of the provisional license in Namibia is still subject to satisfactory finalization of certain conditions by the Bank of Namibia. So my question is on there, will the cost associated with that be really significant, or rather, what would your guidance on the CCI be?
Okay, thank you for that. We have, I think it's six in total conditions that we have to comply with, three of which were primarily as a result in delays on the Bank of Namibia's part to agreeing our organizational structure. In Namibia, we're required to impose a holding company above the bank, and we've always wanted to keep the payroll book separate to the banking activity. In the end, we reached a compromise that we will split it on a 60-40 basis, the reason being that the maximum interest rate you can charge as a bank versus a micro lender is a little lower. The other conditions are also relatively simple to meet. Registration of the new entities, because until we had the regulatory approval, we couldn't move those forward. Operationally, we are all but ready to go live, and we're looking for a final supervisory audit in April, which would enable us to exercise the provisional license and convert it to a full commercial license by July.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from Sharad Dua. Please go ahead.
Thanks. A few factual questions, guys. First up, why are these results not audited?
Sharad, the requirement is that the full set of statutory financial statements would be complete and signed, and so what we have done is that they have been reviewed by the external auditors based on a condensed set of financial statements, and we are very the figures won't change. All that will change is that we thought it prudent, given that we changed external auditors last year, and for them to go through the disclosure process around about all of the notes and disclosures to financials in year one, we felt it prudent to leave a little bit more time for that. So the figures themselves will change, and you can check that yourself when the annual report comes out in a month or so around that. So, but sorry, it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but that's the reason.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Secondly, I don't think I could see anything in the results, but did you do any share buybacks in the last year?
Sure. We got the approval from... The answer is no. We got the approval from shareholders at the AGM in May. We were trading under a cautionary from about March, April last year up until mid-December 2015. So the reality was that we were in a closed period, and the approval that we had did not allow us to trade in shares. So no, we did not do anything last year, really for that reason. And it remains on our agenda, and as included in the commentary, and it's really around certainty around the funding pipeline and funding availability. But it remains on our agenda, but we were prevented from doing anything last year due to the fact of being in a closed period.
And does the approval from last year still hold, or do you need to get approval again this time around in the AGM?
The approval is good up until May 2016, and we will look, that will be on the agenda for the AGM in May 2016.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Colin. Lastly, I suppose, on the two acquisitions, can you just give us a number on how much of the loan book is made up of these two acquisitions, and a bit more colour on, and now that you've got them, what you see inside these businesses in Nigeria in particular, in the current environment, obviously. You know, a lot of people are very nervous about that, but can you talk a little bit about the quality of the book that you think you've bought?
Okay, so Nigeria is about a 70 million pula book net, and Advanz is about a 49 million. So it's about 120 million of 6.3 billion. So really that, not that material, and that really links back to the prudent approach we believe we're taking in entering these two markets. We didn't want to buy a massive book with potentially large amounts of unprovided or dubious quality assets. In Nigeria, the sales price was in Naira, and we have got our capital import certificate, or whatever it's called, certificate of capital import, CCI, document for our investment, which is a very critical part of investing into Nigeria. And basically, work to date as part of the transition and integration has shown that we have a very capable, but if I can use the word, unloved workforce, and they seem to be rising very favorably to our investments in credit sales and credit risk management training that our microfinance partners are rolling out there. They have a reasonable, I'm not going to say good, microfinance technology platform, but again, that has been untouched for a while, so we have to make some changes there if we wish to diversify the product range. And they have a good working relationship with their parent that, as part of the negotiations, we will continue under a transitional agreement to use their services until we're in a position that we can, so to speak, cut ourselves fully free. Now, we don't want to rush to do that because obviously the brand value of SBN is important. We will have to rebrand by August as part of the sales agreement, but we are quietly confident that we have bought an asset that over the next few years will give us a very good platform to not only further expand within Lagos State, but as I indicated, with the national license, will allow us to grow into other economic zones within Nigeria. Yes, it's an uncomfortable ride with the threat of devaluation and the oil price there, but that, to be honest, isn't really trickling down too much to the segments of the economy in which we're operating. If anything, a lower oil price will reduce their costs of energy, and therefore they will have more spending power in its simplest terms. So at this stage, we are quietly confident we've made an entry, possibly, say, at the wrong time with the threat of devaluation, but at the end of the day, you can hang around and you'll never get timing right. So we've got in at a reasonable price. We've acquired a good asset that's much aligned with our strategy, and now we need to transform it into part of the Lesseco family.
Thank you very much, Chris. That's helpful.
Thank you. Mr. Waldemar Brown, there are no further questions. Would you like to make any closing comments or have any questions?
Thanks, Aria. Now, I certainly have a couple of questions. Colm, can you, and Chris, can you tell us about conditions in Mozambique? So clearly the country's under the cosh a little bit at the moment. Inflation's running. Rates are being hiked in response. And there's the prospect of austerity from the new, after the fiscal indiscipline of the last lot. Mozambique is a very significant part of the loan book. Can you tell us? Can you guide us? Give us some sense about how conditions look there to you.
As you might imagine with your introduction, they don't look rosy. There are clear challenges, and we are raising our interest rates in line with the economic tightening that's being imposed and rising interest rates. Also with the central part of the country seeing further, how do I describe it politely, political disruption, instability, that clearly is forcing us to cut back our sales activity in that part of the country. But in the totality of our Mozambican operations, we continue to grow quite nicely, as the results have shown. The underlying growth rate in Mozambique was 20% in the balance sheet last year, with an increasing market share that's now at 20% of government employees. That is being threatened by the banks looking to get deduction codes, but our partnership with the third MNO there, we hope by the second half of this year, will be converted into a number of new revenue streams. They have a customer base in excess of 5 million customers, and we have an MOU to work with them over and above being their trust bank for their mobile wallet. So what shall I say? Volatile environment, but business continues to grow quite nicely, and the government has actually made a number of moves to digitize its payroll, which in turn has improved our collection rates there.
That's great, Chris. Thank you. In terms of, you mentioned the competition in Botswana is stiffening. Can you tell us what that looks like on the ground? Are you aware of, can you see, is it visible that banks are making, you know, public forays into your areas of operation? And are they being aggressive on price and volume? Are they increasing their available loan sizes and so on? Just give us a sense about how day-to-day that increased competition is expressing itself.
Okay, well, I mean, where we see it is in what we call settlements, in terms of the churn of our book. People that take a loan for 5 years and 3 to 6 months later, they've moved on and they've gone to a competitor bank. That has been a very worrying development, with overall settlement rates running at twice the levels that we feel comfortable with, so in the 60% plus range. Banks are struggling to maintain their liquidity, so are fighting for deposits. That obviously per se doesn't affect us, but at the same time, because they've got nowhere to place their liquidity, they are making a number of offers into areas we previously thought they wouldn't go. So we've recently seen FNB, sorry, I guess the acronym's the wrong way around to the wrong part of the country. FNB put in a executive loan scheme with the Botswana, which is doing prime plus three, which is around half our rate that we have in the mining sector. We have got, I would have thought, compared to a bank, a better appetite in the mining sector than they might, but they've gone in there. So they've got a lot more conditions, which will make it harder for someone to qualify, but at the same time, it's unwelcome development, if I can put it like that. As to size and tenor, they are offering quite astounding levels of unsecured loans. It is now possible to get 450,000 pula or $45,000 unsecured loans through a few banks on a 6-year repayment profile. We do not think that is sensible lending practice, so we have not joined them at this stage.
Okay, that's thank you. That's very thorough, and we really appreciate the detail. Lastly, Colm, on the impairments, obviously, good to hear that a more, you know, that a stricter rules are in place. Without those stricter rules, is it possible pro forma to tell us what would have happened to impairments? So like for like, with no change to your structural approach.
Yes, Harry, the impact of being a little bit more conservative in terms of our provisioning methodology was 30 million increase in the P&L charge for the year.
Which pretty much accounts for all of the year-on-year change, am I right?
To an extent. Not fully, but to an extent.
With 39, the change year on year, so 30x is about 0.75.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you. Ari, any more questions in the queue?
Yeah, no further questions from the telephone conference.
Okay, something which, if I may, something which is an understandably popular topic structurally when we look at Letseho is the political status of payroll lending and whether there is any structural risk to it as a concept over time. As you mentioned in your preamble, Chris, the company does a lot of work with policymakers and so on. Can you just elaborate a little bit on that, just to address this idea that payroll lending may at some point become politically unpopular or at some point fall out of favor with policymakers. Can you put that in some context for us?
I think where it falls out of favor, this is taking the long-term view, is where people perceive the yields versus the cost of risk being excessive. So it becomes populist from time to time for governments to reconsider the whole deduction scenario. And we've had discussions with them around should the number of deduction codes be limited, should there be no deduction codes, should certain types of entity qualify for a deduction code. We've tried to paint a picture of the consequences of abolishing it. In simplest terms, it will put a lot of government employees in a position where they have to borrow from unregulated and usually unscrupulous, or not usually, but potentially unscrupulous lenders who will not focus on affordability criteria, which is where we start as a responsible lender. And that stress, in turn, will feed through to productivity levels, et cetera, in the workplace. So from a government perspective, where, you know, you take in Namibia, where there's only around 500,000 people in the formal employment sector, of which 100,000 are government employees, that's going to have quite a big impact on both the economy as a whole, if there are a lot of people who are stressed financially through these corner shop lenders, as well as put pressure on the government's ability to operate. So generally that's well received. From our side, clearly we do keep engaged around the area because that threat is always going to be there in some form. We consider it a low to medium risk, partially because we've taken a number of mitigating actions. The most obvious one is to obtain deposit licenses and try and convert our customers to becoming full service customers, so we get their payroll account. But in the interim, you cannot get a loan without a direct debit mandate, so we have alternative recourse should a customer move on from the government and therefore not pay through the deduction methodology. And we also have written agreements with the government, for example, in Mozambique, whereby even if they were to remove the deduction code, there would be a period of, I think it's 3 years in Mozambique, where it's tapered down so that we would have very limited exposure to existing loan business. Clearly, new business becomes an issue, but existing business is not at threat. I'll pause. I don't know whether I've addressed a number of the angles. It is quite a, shall we call it, interesting area, one that we do get asked a lot of questions about, but one which we thought through quite carefully as to the multiple options for mitigating the risk should it ever come about.
No, that's good, Chris. Thank you. Ari, any final questions?
No further questions.
Anyone would? Okay. Look, tell us a little bit, if you can, about the debt raising in December. What was the appetite like out there amongst the debt community?
Harry, we had the first large chunk of the RAND note program matured in December. So 475 million RAND was due for repayment, principally from South African-based investors, although there were a few international ones. And we were pleasantly surprised that the investors bought into and understood the single story, and were able to differentiate it from other purely South African issues. So we were able to raise an additional 180 million rand at the 3 to 4 year level. It did cost a little bit more, but that was expected given the raises in interest rates in the South African market. So from our perspective, we were very pleased that there was an understanding of the Lesego story. There was continued support and appetite for the Lesego debt. We were able to get that away in early December at levels of 3 to 4 years from, and which from a maturity profile perspective was very much to the area that we were looking for. So there has been, I think, as you know, a lot of negative sentiment in South Africa over the last year or so, given certain events there. But the fact that people understand the signal and understand what we're about was quite satisfactory.
That's great. Thank you, Colin. And one last one, Chris. Just back to the more structural, strategic picture. The DFIs, their support for the business goes on unchanged. Looking in your presentation, there's some material there on social impact. I assume that's exactly what DFIs are looking for.
Yeah, no, I mean, we picked this up a while ago that before my time even, that they perceived payroll lending as non-impactful or non-productive. And therefore, a number of them hesitated to lend to us because they'd been burnt with a previous similar organisation that pulled out of Africa. So we have engaged EBS, who are well known in this space of ESG reporting. They have now surveyed 5 of our countries, and we will be working to an impact scorecard where we can use relatively simple measurements to show that our lending is productive or impactful. And as we do that, we will find, I believe, a number of players that have held back in the past coming to the table. And hopefully, a number of those players will offer us funding at either more attractive rates, and where necessary, we can hedge it, or in local currency, which will help us from managing our foreign exchange risk. So it is an important plank to our strategy, and we've already, within our pipeline, which hopefully we'll be able to report on at the half-year results, starting to see some fairly major players move in as new funders.
That's great. And lastly from me, and we'll wrap up. You've been generous with your time, guys.
Lastly.
So in terms of forward-looking statements and guidance for the new year, what would you like to say?
We are confident that we have a clear plan for execution aligned with our financial inclusion agenda, we will continue to focus on growth, performance, and shareholder return. But I can't give you anything less generic than that at this stage.
That was terrifically specific. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate that. Look, Ari, I think we'll wrap up unless there's anybody still in the queue. And it remains for me to thank Chris. Chris and Colm Boycania for being with us today. This call has been recorded. We will produce a transcript, which will be available on request. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today.
Thank you. On behalf of Lechego and African Alliance Capital Markets, that concludes today's call. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.